This episode is brought to you by Hearst Ranch, grass-fed beef raised on California's Central Coast. Now available online through Larder Meat Company. Learn more at HearstRanch.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're spotlighting the people, dishes, and ingredients decolonizing food. We're looking at our Thanksgiving plates and beyond to explore efforts to reclaim food sovereignty in Native American culture, the African diaspora, and Puerto Rico.
I believe that oyster dressing is like the consummate side dish for an amazing fried turkey.
What we're doing there is just working the land, and we're laughing, and we're creating a space for joy. And it's in that healing occurs for us.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Life's a Banquet, a podcast about the final days of living on the planet Earth with me, your host, Nicolas Cage,
and me, also Nicolas Cage.
a cage match? Is this a cage match?
I think it's like a face-off.
Oh, yeah. Do we talk about this already on the show, or was this just personal about a cage match?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's probably come up.
Absolutely. Anything Nicolas Cage can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than Nicolas Cage.
Are you saying, you're like saying that your life is like a cage match?
Yeah, basically.
You're like one-upping him at all times?
Exactly. Take that, Nicolas Cage.
Okay. Well, I
don't try to cage me.
Your version of,
Face Off?
What's the one where they catch him on fire and the bees? Like, the bees, the bees.
Oh, yeah, about, like, the olden times, the Wicker Man. Yeah, he's amazing at freaking out. I watched, I've got Nicolas Cage on the brain, obviously. When don't I? But I came home the other night and was so tired and just brain dead, and I watched The Family Man.
Oh, I love that, with Taya Leone.
Yes, Taya Leone.
I love that.
It really is quite good.
And it's cute.
It's very cute. And he does a lot of Nick Cage classic freaking out, which is great. He's like, well, how could this be? Where am I? It's like Scrooged or A Christmas Carol, basically.
Yeah. I love that movie. I think it's freaking cheesy and adorable. And Taya Leone, smoking hot.
Yeah, Taya Leone's great. And then last night I watched a movie equally. Well, this movie was not great, but it was a Bonnie Hunt vehicle. She was in it, and she directed it and wrote it. It was called Return to Me.
Hunt, star of Jerry Maguire?
Exactly. America's most famous celebrity, Bonnie Hunt. And it was
also
with David Duchovny.
Also star of Jumanji.
Oh, yes. Jumanji.
Sorry, what was the movie?
It was called Return to Me. It was kind of almost like Untamed Heart in that it featured a young Minnie Driver having received a heart transplant, although not from a baboon, but there was a large ape in the movie.
Huh. Which came first? Mm.
What, the ape or Minnie Driver?
The Untamed Heart or Return to Me.
I think that Untamed Heart did, because this must have been from late 90s, and Untamed Heart is definitely early 90s.
Who is the male person in it? I feel like I've seen this, like, DVD cover, but I've never seen this movie.
Well, the reason I brought it up is because the male star is David Duchovny, husband and sex addict of Taya Leone.
Yes, yeah, they're still friends.
Are they married still?
No, they got divorced, but they remain close friends.
Amazing. And I'm assuming they're both listening now. Guys, please call into the show.
Friends of the Duchovnys. The once and former Duchovnys.
Holy shit. How
was
your thing?
What I watched last night is another movie that I never wanted to watch because the DVD looks so stupid, is Crossing Delancey.
What is that?
It's in the vein of Moonstruck.
Okay.
Except for instead of Italian, there's Jewish.
Nice.
And Amy Irving.
Who the hell is that?
Star of Carrie.
Oh.
Star
Carrie?
She plays the regular brown-haired teenager, the one who's not the mean one.
Got it.
She was also married to Steven Spielberg for a while back in the day.
Wow.
Before he married blonde lady that he's still married to.
What is her
Kate
name?
Kate Capshaw,
yeah.
Anyway, it's Amy Irving. There's the brother from Frasier. What's his name? David Hyde Pierce.
Oh, Niles. What a nerd.
There's a young, the bad guy from The Fugitive.
The guy who's like he's like vaguely foreign.
Yeah.
Oh, and he kind of looks like Mr. Big from Sex and the City, but he's not him.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. I was like, oh, this guy. I just know you from being the bad, spoiler alert, the bad guy in The Fugitive.
Yeah, if you haven't seen The Fugitive, stop listening now.
And go watch Crossing the Landsievers. But it's cute. it's a little rom-com, super 80s. And the main character is pretty hot, but I'd never heard of him before. So
really? An unknown hottie?
Yeah, but it's cute. But I looked it up on the internet and I saw the DVD cover and I'm like, this is why I've seen this DVD cover. And it's just like a giant picture of Amy Irving's face. And then it's a teeny tiny little picture of the guy that she ends up getting with. Spoiler alert.
Is the guy she ends up getting with the guy from the villain from The Fugitive?
Mm-mm.
Not Harrison Ford. Guys, guess what? Harrison Ford didn't do it. It was, in fact, a one-armed man.
He did not kill his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
Good movie.
Amazing. H. Ford.
Oh, I also watched... Sorry, one more.
No, please. Good God, go on.
I watched the second movie from the guy who made the movie where it's just like four people that swing in the 70s. What's it called? Like Bob Carroll.
Oh, sure.
Brian Peter and Paul Alex Mary. Or something.
Rosemary Time.
So he made this other movie called Bloom in Love about a divorce lawyer who is in love with his ex-wife. And it's pretty fun.
Cool.
It's all about swinging California in the 70s.
Ooh, key parties?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to now bring up one more movie because, guys, in case you thought this was a historical food podcast, you're wrong. It's a movie podcast about movies you don't care about. So I'm going to talk about a movie called The Ice Storm.
Everyone knows about The Ice Storm.
Which is a great movie. And features a key party.
Oh, and yeah.
Things
and
go
Sigourney
terribly
Weaver
wrong.
In a career revival.
Yes, and Sigourney Weaver. It's true. She did get in there, minus the aliens.
Yeah, it was just her having an affair with someone I don't remember.
With some bland white man who was not nearly hot enough for her. How was your Thanksgiving, my friend?
It was fine. My sister came and picked me up, and we went to her house, and it was just me and her boyfriend and her dog, and they all work from home, so it was safe.
Cool.
And yeah, we just ate a bunch of turkey and trimmed the tree. I made a bunch of tiki drinks. I made some painkillers. I made some Mai Tais.
What the hell?
Did
you make orgeat for it?
No, I bought it.
Oh, but you had orgeat on hand.
Yeah.
Great. It's hard to find that orgeat. We used to make it at Brucey. It was very time consuming.
I actually, you can make it from almond milk to avoid having to like do all the shit with the almonds. But I just found, so I did a little research. I, like, it was hard to find like a natural version in Chicago. So I ended up just buying the Giffard brand version of it, which is, it's very, very almondy. So some people are anti that, but I actually like it. I like the really strong almond marzipan flavor. And they use almond extract in there. So I actually was very fine with that version because the homemade versions or the really natural ones don't have as strong of a flavor.
So, right. And then in which cases, what's the point? I made a cake a couple of months, like 2 months ago, and brought it up to my friend Alexis's house. It was like a plum almond cake, and I put some almond extract in it. And the kids, like, all weekend were like, we have cake. Can we have some of the cake? Like, they were just dying for it. And finally, she let them have some. And they all, like, their faces just, like, completely soured. And they all, like, spit it out. They're like, we don't like this cake because it had, like, so much almond extract in it. They, like, hated it. And now I feel like they don't like anything I make because, like, I've scarred them with, like, a little bit of almond extract, which is fine.
Yeah, I mean, little kids, they're very picky.
They're picky, but they're goddamn cute.
My nephew has been roasting a lot of vegetables here, and he keeps asking me for the salty white broccoli that I keep roasting.
What is the salt? Oh, cauliflower?
It's cauliflower.
Salty white broccoli.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's like Joe Biden's nickname in high school. That makes no sense, but it's so funny.
That's his nickname now.
Salty White Broccoli here. I'm reporting for president. Thanks. I'll take it from here.
Did Orange you see that, carrot. Those pictures of him like lifting weights at the gym?
No.
They were disturbing.
Wow, that's hilarious. That's amazing. He's trying to one-up Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
He's kind of ripped.
Is he? Is he hot? We don't know it.
He's definitely not hot.
I think Bernie Sanders is hot, but I know that I'm very much alone in my belief there. Of that. I have a thing for old, bald Jews with an attitude. Because I also like Larry David.
Okay. Well, they're related, so.
I know. That's funny that they're related, isn't it?
It sure is. but not really, if you think about it. Because they look alike, they talk alike.
Yeah, they even kind of walk alike. Since you asked, I went up to Kingston to visit my friends that I was just speaking about, Alexis and her family. Very sweet. We had a friend who brought some delicious pheasant. Look, pheasant is good. Who knew? I'd never had it before, but...
Old-timey people?
Yeah, old, people in the old days, in the ancient old days, did know it was good. But you know what? They were right. It was very delicious. And yeah.
Just, what's like, the difference between a pheasant and a goose?
Just like a different outfit, I think. I think a pheasant is leaner. Because
have you had a goose before?
Have I had a goose? Of course I've had a goose, Nicole. I had a goose last night. Just kidding. I didn't. Imagine I made myself like a whole glistening goose.
You're just like recreating the 12 days of Christmas.
Yeah, I just eat a different fowl each day. Yeah, I've had goose. It's very, there's a lot of fat on a goose. And like the pheasant had fat, but not nearly as much as like a goose is just like, sounds seems gross. Unhealthy. It, you know what? It is kind of gross. And I also fuck geese. They're shitty animals. They're awful.
I know.
They're nasty.
There's so many geese all over the place here because we have so many fucking subdivisions of all the urban sprawl here. And so there's just geese shit everywhere.
Yeah. They're awful. I've been bitten by a goose on, like, I don't know, dozens of times because I grew up, my dad was the manager of a golf course. And so we lived on the property and it was littered with geese and they would bite and snap and take your food. And they're horrible and they shit everywhere. They have no manners. Although I did have a Gladys Goose lamp growing up that I wish I still had because now they're worth thousands of dollars. Are you familiar with the Gladys Goose lamp?
Yeah, for some reason I looked them up on the internet because somebody posted on Instagram.com and when I found out that they were $500, I was shocked.
Yeah, we had one in my house. They were all the rage, I think, in like this late 70s. Maybe even earlier, but I remember we had one and I asked my mom about it and I think she just burned it in a fire.
A glass item?
It wasn't glass. It was plastic.
Oh, it's... Ew, that's even worse.
Yeah. I have a question for you, Nicole, about eating exotic birds. Why do you think we don't eat swans?
Somebody's eating a swan.
Well, I mean, clearly somebody's eating a swan. But like,
it's because of the ugly duckling, that children's story. It's pro-swan propaganda.
Pro-swanaganda? Are you working for Big Swan?
Yeah.
Big Swan.
You work for Dove.
How fucking dare you? Look, I wouldn't eat a dove. I mean, that's not true. I would eat a dove. What's the difference between a dove and a chicken, really, right? At the end of the day.
What's a turtle dove? Is that different from a freaking regular dove?
Well, it's
because that's
like
the 12 days of Christmas.
Right. A turtle dove is like, remember what we were talking about a couple weeks ago when people would sew different animals together? So a turtle dove is just a dove with a dove's butt and a turtle upper body.
A turtle's face. But they can still fly.
It is a dove that has dove wings and a dove butt, but it has turtle fangs and a turtle's face and claws.
And it uses dove body wash.
And it uses dove body wash, and it's great at karate, and it loves pizza. Just like every other turtle that we know. But look, anyone out there who has dined on swan flesh, please call into the show. David Duchovny, I'm looking at you.
Yeah.
He looks like a swan nibbler, doesn't he?
Those celebrities always eating crazy pheasants.
Celebrities always packing their gullets full of rare birds. eagles and vultures.
It's like before they have like the secret sex party, they all eat rare birds.
And then some of them are rare birds. Isn't that like the conspiracy theory of like the reptilian race, that they're, I mean, birds are reptiles. So what we're trying to tell you guys is that David Duchovny is a swan.
It goes all the way to the top.
Holy shit. Oh my God. Well, we've uncovered it, folks. Should we get into our topic?
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about something that I'm sure everyone is thinking about today, 6 days after Thanksgiving, and that's leftovers.
Mmm, yum.
Yeah. My first angle was to just find some really disgusting and or elaborate leftovers to make fun of, but then I realized that that is rude and also probably a little bit class shamey.
Totally. I kind of had the same feeling too about leftovers, like wanting to say, ew, leftovers, but I mean, but how elitist.
I do have a couple of things. One is that there was a Thanksgiving leftover sandwich recipe posted in the New York Times, and mm-hmm. people freaked out about it. Did you see this?
I did, yes, but please tell our listeners, because it's hilarious. People were not having it. They're like, I've had enough of this year. Not a Thanksgiving sandwich on top of it, God damn it.
One of the comments that I read was just like, what? A Thanksgiving sandwich that makes even more leftovers? This is ridiculous. And just like went off. He's like, I will not be making this sandwich.
Okay. Like, okay. Okay, cool. Good. Have fun not eating. We don't care. Nobody asked.
And the other thing I saw, which gave me pause, was the Thanksgiving Crunchwrap Supreme recipe.
No.
I love a Crunchwrap Supreme.
Me too.
And I like turkey. And also the picture of it, there's a picture of it where it has like turkey and like cranberry dressing, but also like scallions.
Scallions?
Yeah.
Is it supposed to be vaguely like Mexican too? Is there like jalapenos in it or?
I don't even know. I was deeply troubled, but you know, no leftover shaming, whatever you guys got to do. We made a turkey casserole thing at my sister's house. And it was good.
That makes sense. My thing with like Thanksgiving leftovers is that I think, again, I'm not trying to leftover shame either or be elitist or like be negative about like say being frugal or not wasting food. But I think with Thanksgiving leftovers, a lot of times people try to like be as like, I don't know, over the top, like disgusting. And like, I'm searching for the word. I don't know, just making things that are like over the top that like shouldn't be eaten.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. A casserole is fine. The sure, other thing that I great. Thought was kind of annoyed by, we just made these things where I took the leftover mashed potatoes, mixed cheese and an egg in there and put them in muffin tins. And those were freaking good.
Wow. Look at you. You're a regular old Betty Crocker. That sounds great.
Yeah. But I saw a recipe for like turkey tikka masala, but like if you don't have that shit already to go, then
exactly
your refrigerator is already jam packed full of Thanksgiving items and you're gonna go buy turkey tikka masala. I don't know,
you could just eat just like the same thing, like I don't understand the repurposing on day two. Do you know what I mean? Maybe like a soup or something, but it's like if you still have mad of everything, just eat the same thing over again. That's what,
yeah.
I don't get.
Yeah, anyways, so I decided to just kind of look around and see what's out there, and I found an article called The Economic History of Leftovers in The Atlantic by Helen Viette from 2005. Hi. A simpler time.
Really was, huh?
And I'm basically just going to read it to you guys verbatim, okay?
Great. I'm just going to put on my sleeping cap.
And settle in for a long winter's nap, okay? Okay. So, in the 19th century, maybe you've heard of it.
Mm. Sorry.
People didn't have, there wasn't a category for leftovers because using leftover food was so fundamental. So like it wasn't like you would just, because there was no refrigeration, the preserving process was part of the cooking process. So it was just like, we're cooking for breakfast. You're going to eat whatever was finished from dinner. And that's, you know, people were pickling things and smoking things and salting things. And there was always a big simmering stock pot on the stove, and you just throw all your trash in there.
Totally. Put a bone in it, and now you got a stew going, like Carl Weathers likes to say.
Yeah. but your house is going to be so smelly. Your dugout. And also, I'm just picturing Laura Ingalls Wilder during all of these 19th century moments, as she would like.
She would love it. She would love this episode.
So by the turn of the century, ice boxes had come around and been invented, and they were becoming standard in the home. And then electric refrigerators followed pretty soon after that. And that basically just changed how everybody ate. So basically in one generation, we stopped making cheese, pickling eggs, and making ketchup, which is my favorite part of the beginning of Meet Me in St. Louis, a great movie.
I've never seen it. Starring Judy Garland. It's a Christmas movie, right?
It's not really a Christmas movie, but that the song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas was written for that movie.
Got it. Okay.
So it could be considered Christmassy. And so when the refrigerator sort of became a thing, the term leftovers was invented. Mm-hmm. In 1910, a cookbook called Leftover Foods and How to Use Them was commissioned by a refrigerator corporation.
Very sneaky, big refrigerator.
Those corporations are always trying to make cookbooks like we're not going to notice what's going on, but we noticed.
Exactly.
In the early 20th century, Americans spent 40% of their income on food.
Whoa.
Now we spend 40% of our income on rent and student loans.
Yes. And what do we spend on food? Like
less than 10%.
60%? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, not me. I spend so much money on food and then I barely even eat anything and just put it in my like freezer. And then my freezer just broke because there's so much food in it. Yeah. That's a problem.
Rich person's problem. Okay, so there was also in the early 20th century, 40% of your income was spent on food and there were diseases of malnutrition like rickets and pellagra, which I had never heard of.
What the fuck is rickets even though? Don't we want to know what that is?
I live in a time of food excess.
What is rickets?
And rickets is a disease of malnutrition.
I know, but I mean, what happens to you? It sounds itchy. Is it itchy?
I don't know. I think it stunts your growth. I don't really know.
Listen, if anyone out there has rickets, do you have any? Again, we're looking at you. Please call in.
That just made me think of a really bad joke, which is rickets don't lose my number. But I don't want to make fun of diseases of malnutrition, so let's move on.
Okay.
So these diseases hit the poor the most, so they didn't have the luxury of leftover food because they were just eating. They're like, you know, they're barely getting enough to eat
right from
meal to meal. So for them, leftovers were not a thing. And so basically, it was just a problem for the early 20th century upper middle classes.
Right.
Then, during World War II, leftovers became a moral issue because the United States started an international food aid program to help the Allies where the war fucked up food production. So they're like, hey, buddies, thanks for being on our side. Sorry that we bombed your food factory. Here is some food. And they became a big turkey tetrazzini.
Yeah,
they started a big propaganda situation where they focused on Americans eating all of their leftovers and for housewives is to eat every single crumb and to not waste any food because of the poor starving children in Belgium. And so things like goulash and casseroles started to become part of the American diet. People really went for this patriotic leftover eating. Some people said that restaurants should sell food scraps from dirty plates so that they didn't go in the trash.
No, perfect. That we used to do that at Brucey.
Yeah, you would sell them.
Yeah, just a little
I don't
little
know who
you guys.
Sell them to, but that's fine.
No, we sold them. Just kidding.
People said that it was immoral to own pets because they ate food that could be sent to starving children. So the thing about this is that back then, pets ate old human food. They didn't have pet food.
They never had pet food. Okay.
Yes. Those poor assholes are eating like boiled milk.
I just said boiled milk, but spoiled milk is worse.
Boiled milk is delicious. Spoiled milk and old bread, and everyone's like, it's immoral for you to have a pet in the first place. And I'm like, it's immoral to feed your pet spoiled milk.
Totally. And also that was when pets like strictly had to sleep and live outside. Like the dog was never even allowed in the house. So here's this poor animal just like living outside all winter, eating
Why did you even domesticate me? You guys are the worst.
He's like, I hate burnt lasagna.
All these possums. So yeah, people were like, it's immoral to own a pet, and some Americans killed their pets.
What?
Rather than feed them leftovers that could go to the family or to the starving children. And newspapers lauded these people as patriotic.
How do you think they killed them? Is it weird that that's my first question?
Yeah, it's just like Old Yeller.
Like, do you just shoot them? I guess everyone had a gun back then. It's not the Old West, but... Or do you just
shoot them? You can strangle it? Stop eating them.
I'm just like having an issue with like thinking about like how these people are killing their pets. Like my first thought was that they, I don't know. Let's just stop there.
A whole generation of children are traumatized because their dad had to shoot their cat and their dog.
I mean, how much fucking food could a cat milk. Eat? how much could you be giving to a cat? I could see a dog. Okay, kill the dog. It's eating you out of house and home. It's but a tiny cat. You're going to just beat it against a tree rather than just give it a couple of crumbs of apple pie? I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
Patriots. That's a shame. Wow. That is patriotic, though.
Yeah, that is what the movie The Patriot is all about.
That's what the Patriot Act was written for.
Okay. So then the war's over. Everyone's like, yay, it's the 1920s. And Americans hate leftovers because food is cheap and we are rich.
Mm.
Rich people start to brag about how they never eat leftovers. There's a whole thing about wealthy Southerners talking about how they give their leftover food to their servants, which is a whole thing about I didn't write down what it was called because I'm a bad researcher, but it was called like something about giving their employees leftovers was a way for people in the South to not pay their servants a living wage because they're cool. Like, well, we give them food, so they don't need to make as much money.
Interesting.
And it's real shady.
Still
and not
doing
cool.
That. Today.
It's amazing that they didn't all get murdered by their servants. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not
so
yet.
Everyone's like, yay, it's the 1920s. I hate leftovers. I'm rich. I'm in the Great Gatsby.
I was just going to say that.
But then the Depression comes and everyone's like, hold on. Leftovers are great. I am starving to death because of the Death Bowl. So as you can see, which makes sense, leftovers sort of popularity waxes and wanes based on how much money people have. So basically in the Depression, because it lasted so long, because so much of the population was poor, everyone was talking about it. They were talking about how leftovers are, you know, honorable. You should get creative with it. It's like a way for the housewife to be creative and show her spunk. That's how we got. So this is when things like pot pies and meatloafs and aspic started coming into happening, where you just put all your leftovers into a jello mold. There's also such things as ham banana rolls with cheese sauce.
No Hey, yes. You no. Yep. no banana, no
ham banana.
Cheese banana,
a ham and a banana walk into a bar and get some cheese sauce.
And they say, hey, cover me in cheese sauce.
There's also something called a beef put together, which I didn't look up because I want you to use your imagination.
Oh, interesting. Because my first thought was a steak wearing a suit and tie.
Huh. I was just thinking of a beef Wellington.
Oh, okay. That is probably more reasonable.
We did sort of a version of that too with our Thanksgiving leftovers. We just stuffed mashed potatoes, gravy, and turkey into puff pastry. It was good.
That sounds great.
There's also this dish where you pureed carrots, presumably leftover, add breadcrumbs to them, and then form them back into the shape of a carrot.
Oh, that's cute. But it is a lot of work for no reason, huh?
Well, not for no reason, because you're using those leftovers because you're poor as hell.
No, I understand. I'm just saying, like, I don't understand. Well, that's fine. I guess it makes sense. I would have just done something more like pureeing the carrots, maybe topping it with breadcrumbs and baking it to mush it back into a regular carrot. Seems wild, but...
Yeah, well, it's time-consuming, so you forget... How desperately
you
poor you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, you know, leftovers were chill for a while. And then in the 60s, they became a joke again. Because in the 60s, a large portion of America was way more well off. And so they didn't need to eat leftovers. They weren't food insecure. And so they were only spending 25% of their income on food now. And food was just getting cheaper and cheaper. So... They weren't like, let's make an angel food cake with all these leftover egg whites. Let's just throw all the egg whites in the trash. Let's
throw them out the window.
Throwing away edible food became, or is, has always been, but was in the 60s a sign of financial security. And we started to throw away a shit ton of edible food. And that sort of led us to where we are now, where we still throw away a shit ton of edible food, but leftovers are back in style. So I'm sure that you're aware of people trying to do like the no waste lifestyle, where they don't use, they don't throw anything away when they cook.
Yes.
And they're, you know, people are more conscious of the actual hidden costs of food, like water and the environment and livestock and workers on farms. And so it's back in style, you would say. But I feel like saying that leftovers are back in style is classist, because like I grew up always eating leftovers.
Yeah, I agree.
My family.
Me too.
Always. I mean, my family won't even get a pizza delivered because of the extra delivery charge. They go pick up their pizza every time, which I am annoyed by now in my old age. But
my grandfather, we were pretty broke. My parents were pretty broke when I was really little. And we lived at my grandparents' house, and they had a tiny house, and they were not very well off either. And my grandpa grew up in the Depression, my dad's dad, and he was the most frugal person ever. He would pick the dandelion greens out of the cracks in the driveway and cook them. He would always go clamming. And my dad told me, my parents differ on this story, but my dad told me that I had a bunny when I was little. I never knew what happened to it. And my dad said that my grandpa took it out of the cage and cooked it and ate it.
Well, that's the same. I mean, that's like also growing up during the Depression, I think. Because my grandma knew how to shoot squirrels and eat them. But she didn't do it anymore when I was alive. But she had done it in her childhood.
Yeah. My grandpa was just like a very...
Because, you know, once you are like that, I don't think it really wears off.
I completely agree. And this man like just couldn't, he was in the Korean War. He was just that kind of guy. And I think he couldn't reconcile people having a pet, probably because like he had to kill his own pet. And so he decided to also kill my pet.
Yeah. He's like, this kid does not need to keep feeding all of this sour milk to this rabbit. also, rabbits are kind of gross to have as pets. They're just like, I had a friend who had rabbits, and she nailed their cages to the wall for some reason. What? And they would just always pee all over the wall.
Why? Really, who is this person?
Crazy person.
The son of Sam? Yeah, like, I mean, rabbits are adorable, but they shit. They just, like, won't agree to shit in one concentrated place. They, like, can't get it. Why could we train every other animal? If we can eat an eagle, we can certainly train a bunny. Am I right?
No, they're not very smart. They're like hamsters.
Hamsters at least know how to run on the wheel. What do bunnies do?
They drown in their own water dish.
Is that true?
Yeah, my friend's bunny, not the one who nailed into a wall, a different friend who had a rabbit. Her rabbit drowned in its water dish.
How do you have so many friends who own rabbits? That's pretty freaky, huh?
I don't know.
What kind of circles are you running in? Indiana. You move back to Indiana, everyone has a bunny, and you're like the odd man out. They're like, where's your bunny, Nicole?
No, this was in the 80s. I feel like I don't know anyone. Yeah. First, I don't know anyone at all. I have no friends because of COVID. Thanks a lot. I live a completely isolated life, rabbit free. And
maybe that's what you're missing.
In the 80s, a lot of my friends had rabbits.
No, me too, actually. I thought we were talking about now. In the 80s and 90s, I think that rabbits were very popular. And you know what else was a popular pet in the 80s and 90s, which I'm very glad went the way of the dodo bird? Not meaning it's extinct, just meaning it's gross and stupid. A ferret.
Yeah, my friend in a college had a pet ferret, and I did not like it.
Unacceptable. Unacceptable pet.
They're smart, though.
Yeah, but they're just like, they're like those, you know those tubes that are like long balloons that have a hole in the middle and they're full of water?
No.
That toy, it's like a weird toy that kids have. It's like a long...
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
That's a ferret. I mean, except the ferret has hair and very sharp teeth.
Yeah, they're weird. They're like weasels, but...
They are weasels. They're house weasels.
One time, I used to work for the Department of Education in New York, and we would go went upstairs to this abandoned cafeteria, and I found a magazine called Ferret Monthly.
No!
Yeah, and I took it. I don't have it anymore, but I
Oh my God.
I recently found a picture of it in my phone. I was like, oh my God, Ferret Monthly, I forgot about you.
Wow, dude, that's going to go on my all-time deal breakers list. You hit it off with someone new. They're really amazing. You really like them. You're just connecting. The sex is great. You have the same interests. Like, you're like, I finally met them. And then you go back to their house, and hidden underneath their pillow is a copy of Ferret Monthly.
Which is now out of print, so it's even weirder.
Oh, a vintage Ferret Monthly? Or what if it even worse, Ferret Weekly?
Right, Ferret, like the TV guide, but for ferrets.
Oh my God, I can't believe that's hilarious. Okay, should we take a little breakaroo, come back, and we'll hear the rest of this story?
Yep.
Okay, great.
This episode is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. The Hearst family has raised cattle on California's Central Coast since 1865. Today, Hearst Ranch's signature product is their 100% grass-fed, completely hormone and antibiotic-free beef. The Hearst Ranches have always treated their animals with great care. Their cattle live a completely natural existence as foragers and grazers. Well-managed grazing fertilizes the land naturally, sustains a seasonal rhythm to the ranches, and produces a remarkable meat whose flavor is the authentic taste of the American West. Hearst Ranch beef is available seasonally, May through August, in select Whole Food markets throughout California, and all year round at their retail locations in San Simeon and Paso Robles. And now, HRN listeners in Arizona, Nevada, and California can get Hearst Ranch beef delivered right to their door through Larder Meat Company. Go to lardermeatco.com and shop the 100% grass-fed box to stock your freezer with Hearst Ranch beef. That's LARDER meatco.com. Learn more about the storied history, farming practices, and conservation efforts of Hearst Ranch at hearstranch.com.
And we're back, everyone. We're ladies back. And germs. I just want to mention that I switched my chair that I normally sit in. I normally sit in this like yellow chair. It's one of my dining chairs, and I have it on my computer, and it's quite rickety. It makes a lot of noise. So today I switched to like a leather chair that I have in my house, but it is making, I don't know if you can hear that, kind of like gastrointestinal sound. So in case you're curious, it's just the chair, everyone.
Okay. Thank God you told me.
I know. I knew that that inquiring minds wanted to know. Okay. So I'm going to start you off with a couple of jokes here, and it'll be a dead giveaway as to what my topic is. But so if you're going to murder someone, do it with a Tupperware top. No one will ever be able to find it. It's clever. It's clever.
It's funny because it's true.
It's true. Just ask my mom, who refuses to organize her Tupperware. And that's what I love about you most, Mom, is that you just have this giant, giant cabinet underneath your sink that's just like a Tupperware graveyard.
She's not alone. Millions of Americans have the same issue.
It's true. It's really wacky. It's like a ball pit, but full of Tupperware.
Oh, yeah. The sound of the rummaging is the best.
And she'll always go and look through it. And, you know, my mom's like a sweetie pie, but she also has just this, like, really, she gets frustrated easily. So she'll be looking through it and she's like, fucking shit, cunt, fuck. Just like, can't find a Tupperware. I'm like, are you okay? She's like, this fucking shit Tupperware. I just need to organize it one of these days. This has been like what she's been saying since I was born.
Well, that's what my parents have a very, very, very tiny, tiny kitchen, like the kitchen that you would have in a mobile home, like not a mobile home, but like an RV.
Okay.
Like that's the size of the kitchen that they have. And so I was talking to my stepmom and I was like, you know, we could get some stuff to organize this situation because you only have one cabinet and it's to fit everything into one cabinet. And
that's rough.
And she was like, no, this house is too old for me to buy any organizing stuff. And I'm like, no, I'm like, so many hours of your life will be unfrustrated. She's probably just wondering what she's going to do with all her free time. She doesn't have to look for stuff.
Exactly. But like also when you're used to your own like weird thing in your house, like it's just like, well, I live this way and so I'm used to it. And so it's fine. We all do
every time I take out a goddamn skillet, I have to take off like 16 things off the top of it. And we use that thing every day. infuriating.
It is annoying. I will give it to you. It is very
annoying. I'm so angry.
Oh my God, just relax. So I have one more joke for you. Why did the walrus go to the Tupperware party?
I don't know.
He wanted to find himself a tight seal.
Our walrus you have to, into seal?
That's exactly what I was going to say. For this, you have to believe that walruses and seals co-bang each other. Crossbreed.
Are they going to eat the seal or are they going to date?
Well, I think judging by the fact they said tight, he's looking for a seal with like a, you know, a tight puss.
Oh, I thought he meant like she's tight. Like that
Oh, she's tight. Okay. I mean, obviously my brain obviously went totally south of the border because I'm a 15-year-old boy at heart and in my brain. Okay. Today I got my information about the history of Tupperware from Smithsonian's Magazine, an article by Kat Eschner, an article by Larry Gatlin in the New York Post, and an article in Mental Floss by Nicole Garner. Okay, here we are. Picture it. I did not write down any dates. I don't really care. This is like Earl Tupper was the guy who invented Tupperware, and it came out in the mid-1940s. So he invents it. He's a plastics guy. He works in plastics post-World War II. And the whole thing is
he's not like a plastic from Mean Girls.
No, he's made of plastic. He's the world's first living, breathing, fully plastic man, Earl Tupper. And so he invents Tupperware after kind of tooling around with a bunch of other inventions. But like there wasn't plastic in the home up until this point. It was very unusual to see plastic in the home. And this was one of like the big issues why Tupperware had a hard time at first. People definitely didn't use it for saving food. And like some of the same things you were talking about, I think it's cool that you did the story you did, just like the history of Tupperware, because it kind of gives a glimpse into, you know, post-World War II is when it kind of comes out. So people are like, okay, you're talking my language. I could save something instead of just giving it to this terrible, terrible dog I've been looking to kill. but they don't like plastic. So they're just like, well, I guess I'm just going to try to stuff this whole cake into a jar. So something needed to shift.
I think
here.
That they had glass containers. Everything was glass.
They did. It was very breakable, though. So their first invention was the Wonder Bowl, which was just like a big bowl with a lid. It's exciting.
Good name. Wonder I know. Bowl.
Look at this. Well, everything in like the 40s and 50s was like, especially the 50s, right? It was like futuristic, like the Wonder Bowl, the Space Bowl, you know. But, you know, I gotta give a credit. Vintage Tupperware is very nice looking. It's much different than, like, the Tupperware of today, which gets stained with tomato sauce. And
thanks, capitalism.
Yeah, thanks a lot, fucking capitalism. We could have had nice Tupperware if it's not for you.
I mean, not that Ed Tupper was, like, an upstanding guy.
No, Ed Tupper was a Marxist.
Oh, he was?
No, I'm kidding.
A Marxist mid-level marketing scheme? I'm down.
Imagine a Marxist MLM.
Is it mid-level marketing?
Multi-level marketing.
Multi-level. I'm like, it's mid-level. It's not really like a high-level marketing scheme. It's mid-level.
It's just mid-levels. Look, here's the thing. So multi-level marketing, as Nicole just mentioned, is basically like a way of like, it's direct sales. So like Avon, Electrolux, I will tell you another funny story about my grandpa in a minute about Electrolux, but it's like basically when you get things at wholesale cost and you're meant to sell them retail yourself instead of the company selling them.
Amway.
It's direct to consumer and it's basically a pyramid scheme. But Tupperware did not start off as being like a direct sales company. It just was, it was tanking. Because nobody wanted weird plastic stuff in their house and like they didn't get it. They're like, oh, I'm good with this. So enter this woman, Brownie Wise. First of all, is Brownie the cutest name for a human that could possibly exist?
It is, but is it also sort of like emasculating in a way so that you're always just like, don't take her seriously?
Interesting. I have no idea. All I know is that she was a real trip and she seemed like a cool person. Obviously, we need to hear more. There might be other things about her that come out that aren't so good. I couldn't find any. She sounded like a real
fucking
badass. Right.
There's also, do they talk about her in The Dream, that podcast about MLMs?
Yeah, they do. And that's a great podcast that you turned me on to. The first season was like really, really awesome.
Yeah.
But so basically Brownie Wise is a single divorced woman who, quote, got a divorce from her drunken and moody ex-husband, which is like 1950s speak for saying that he used to beat the shit out of her when he was wasted. So totally. she lived with her mom and son in Florida, and she started hosting, she basically began doing Tupperware parties, which were called poly tea parties back then, because like poly tea was like the kind of plastic.
Oh my God. They didn't even have a cute name for it?
No. And so she'd host these poly tea parties out on her patio, or lanai, if you will, if you're a Golden Girls fan. And she recruited other people to work for her. So, like, hostesses would receive merchandise as a thank you for, like, lending their homes. And then by 1949, the Wonder Bowls were, like, really selling fast. She sold, like, almost $200,000 of merchandise in a year. One woman sold more than 56 bowls in a week.
Oh, my God.
I know. That's a lot of bowls. Can you imagine knowing 56 people and selling them a plastic bowl in one week?
That seems crazy. Also, like, what was her technique? She's just driving around being like, hey, look at this poly tea I got.
Well, I think it's community.
It's like a polymer.
Look at this dangerous plastic that I'm looking to introduce into your home that's going to change the whole way the earth runs and spins for the rest of time.
Soon there'll be a whole island in the ocean made out of this crap.
So she's like, I'm looking to destroy the environment. Who's coming with me? So anyway, yeah. So she would basically, well, she did it by like hosting these parties. So it's like, you know, this was specially geared for like women, single women, and they eventually got like men involved too. But it was a way for, you know, the way I heard it, have heard it described, it was empowering at the time because it was a lot of women who were told like all they can do is, you know, take your shoes off and get back in the kitchen. And this is a way of women like selling things and kind of, and then other people talk about how maybe it wasn't great for feminism because it kept women at home and not in the actual, you know, workforce and doing more professional things. But I don't know. I think if it felt empowering for women at the time, it's a good thing.
It's also a way for women whose husbands didn't want them to go into the workforce, but they really wanted to do something to like still stay under their weird husband's rule, but also have something of their own.
Right, right. Totally. So she would do things, and she like started doing these like group parties and these like really dramatic games. I'm going to talk more about that at the end, but this one was just funny to me. One of them was tossing a sealed Wonder Bowl full of grape juice around the room to demonstrate the strength of the seal.
No.
Really, really amazing. But anyway, so it just like, it made me laugh, and it made me think of my grandfather, the same grandfather I was just talking about earlier with the dandelion greens and who murdered and ate my pet. He was an Electrolux vacuum salesman, and it was like the pride and joy of his life because up until then he had been like an oil truck driver. And so when he became an Electrolux salesman, they gave him like a free Cadillac. It was like the thing of his life. He was, you know, he was obsessed with it. He was so proud of it. And so my uncle recently told me this story about he went to people's houses, and his whole shtick is he'd bring a bag of dirt with him wherever he went, and he would toss it on these people's floor after they let him in the house to demonstrate how well the Electrolux worked. So I guess he went into a house one day, and he had taken my Uncle Steven with him on a call, and he's like, look at this, son. This is how this works. He's like, we're going to throw the dirt. So he goes, and he's like, I want to show you how the Electrolux works. And he plugs it in, he throws the dirt on it. People are like, no. They're like, our electricity doesn't work. So he just had to like basically crab walk out of the room having just poured like all this dirt on their floor.
I hope he swept it up.
I have no idea. But it's really terrible. But anyway, so, okay. According to some articles I read, the congenial atmosphere of a party is relaxing. All the guests are imbued with a group spirit of the party. The social spirit of a party tends to lower sales resistance of those present, as well increase the competitive buying spirit. Buying spirit is contagious. It's a powerful, proven fact that you will sell more to a group of 15 women than you will sell to them individually, which is true.
Yeah, because the crowd mentality takes over.
Exactly. Okay, so Brownie used her power for good, which is why, like, I mean, amongst other things I read about her, but she just sounded like a cool woman. She was a philanthropist. She established Tupperware Art Fellowships. Oh, so anyway, I should mention that they gave her a vice presidency position, like vice president of sales, basically, in Tupperware in the late 40s because of how amazing she was. She was just like a regular housewife, and she ended up being like a vice president in this company. But she did not have a contract, and she did not have any stock in the company, which comes
in
later.
Yeah, I remember that part. They kind of, they definitely screwed her over.
Yeah, they fired her.
She's the reason, that's right, they fire her, and she's the reason that Tupperware exists today.
Exactly. They fire her, and they give her $30,000. And then eventually, like, Earl Tupper ends up selling the company, divorcing his wife, and, like, moving to Costa Rica. So... whatever, he sucks. But yeah, she went on to work for like other companies, like cosmetic companies and stuff like that, but not all of them were that great. She got fired in 1958 because, yeah, she didn't have a formal contract. It really sucks. He ended up selling the company for $16 million. But anyway, I want to tell you like a really funny story. Okay, so she ends up doing like all these like wacky parties. At the end of one infamous soiree, she surprised 1,200 guests with a luau on a private island, which she owned. So I guess she was, like, making some bank. She didn't realize that it was going to be terrible weather, so a storm came in and started, like, you know, really fucking with everything. And people got, like, really hurt, and they were, like, trying to scramble to get off the island to the mainland. And 21 people ended up in the hospital because all the boats crashed in the darkness. Can you just imagine, like, clutching to Tupperware?
How does this bitch have an island?
She has an island, and people got shipwrecked on it. And they had to, like, basically save themselves with, thank God there was all that Tupperware.
They just floated on the Tupperware until someone came to save them?
Yeah, they're like, please, somebody. The Wonder Bowl. It's
you know full where of the grape juice. Where was the island?
I'm assuming somewhere, probably, I would think, in like off of Florida, because she lived
one
in Florida.
One of the Keys?
Probably, yeah. One of, let's say... Key Largo. Montego.
She owned Key West.
She owned Key West, which, sidebar, I love Key West. Have you ever been?
No, I've never been there. I got to get there. But COVID is... I actually was planning on going there this February with a friend of mine.
I would love to go to Key West with you because Key West would be a perfect place for us.
I know it would be. But she was like, she's like, I'm going on a... She just had a baby, so her baby's one, and she's like, mom needs to go on a vacation. She was like, do you want to go to Key West with me? And I was like, of course. And now we can't go.
Key West is totally the place for you. It's like a cool drive. There's tons of thrift stores. You can just like
it's
stop
so expensive
at, like,
to stay there because we were going to go. You and I were going to go for a while, but then we didn't. It's like very expensive to stay there. Cheap to get there, expensive to stay.
Yeah, that's why it's like better to kind of probably stay in like one of the other Keys.
Yeah.
This is a Key West podcast. Also, Key Lime. I mean, delicious. I made a key lime pie for Thanksgiving. It was so
good. We had a key lime pie for Thanksgiving also.
You did? Was it good?
My sister's boyfriend is from Florida. He loves key lime pie. We didn't actually get into it because we actually had a really funny thing happen to us, which I'll tell you after you tell me. Are there any more hilarious party stories?
Yeah, there's a couple more. Do you want me to finish it up here? This one's amazing. Okay. So here's a couple of, like, I was just, like, scouring the internet, and this was harder information to find than I thought it would be. But I scoured the internet for, like, different Tupperware party games, like vintage Tupperware party games, and here's a couple of the ones that I think are funniest. This one's the best.
Yeah, you couldn't find it because Google sucks really bad, and they won't publish any articles that haven't been written since the year 2018. It's really annoying.
I know. It is really annoying. Okay, but I did find these. So there was the nickel game. In the nickel game, a game from the early days of Tupperware parties, an open Tupperware container is placed on the opposite end of the room. The party forms two teams, and one leader is chosen for each team. The leader runs across the room with a nickel between her knees and attempts to drop the nickel in an open bowl.
Oh, okay.
How could you possibly run with a nickel in between your knees?
I don't know.
No, seriously. How could you?
Your knees
this player
are
then
together.
Runs back to the... I feel like we have to, like, do this on our own after the show. I should have practiced it beforehand. Okay. This player then runs back to the back of the line, and the next person runs forward also with a nickel between the knees. The first team to get all its nickels in a bowl wins a prize. Now, I don't know what the fuck this has to do with Tupperware, but it sounds insane.
You're just getting everybody in the spirit.
I mean, That's like my worst nightmare, having to do a group activity like this. That's so humiliating. No, thank you. This next game is called the Potatoes and Apples game. In the what? Am I frozen?
No, I'm just saying. I'm scared. What's going to happen with this game?
Yeah, this is not as bad. This is more just like bizarre. In the Tupperware Potato Party game, the host contacts each guest before the party and asks her to bring a single potato. Not a Mary potato. Sorry, Mr. Potato Head. During the party, the host awards points based on specific characteristics of the potato. I don't know how you could, like, I don't, okay. For example, red potatoes may receive 25 points, while brown potatoes receive 10 points. The largest number of points goes to anyone who brought her potato in a Tupperware.
Rude.
Can you imagine, just some freaky lady bringing a huge Tupperware full of one single, like, baby red potato?
But also, why is she going to the Tupperware party if she already knows about Tupperware?
Exactly. Prizes are awarded to those who score the highest after all the points have been tallied. In a variation of this game, players each bring an apple and combine the apples to make applesauce after the game is over.
That's like 7 hours of work.
It's so much work. It's so stupid. And it's just like, you can just picture that it's like such a mean girls game that the popular like ladies in the neighborhood are like, oh my God, Darlene, I love your potato. It's so round. And then like some nerdy one, they're like, Gladys, your potato is covered in spuds. 1 point.
Yeah, the new girl from California brought the red potato, which I've never even heard of.
Okay, I have one more. I've never done that. Ask each of your guests to bring a $10 roll of quarters to the party. Place a bowl in the middle of the table that you're sitting at. The hostess starts announcing an activity that she has never done. Any of the other guests have done that activity, they must place a quarter in the bowl. This is my favorite part. This is where it gets real fucking bitchy. If a guest claims she has never done something, but someone else reminds her that she actually did... Elaine, you did have anal sex with the mailman. What are you talking about? The woman that denied she did it must pay 2 quarters instead of 1.
Oh my God. So it's like, never have I ever.
Exactly. But like with like housewives who get like a little too drunk, probably on like boxed wine, and start like outing each other for all their like crazy sex acts. The game continues in a clockwise pattern around the table, each woman announcing something she has never done. I would be, to be a fly on the wall. A never have I ever Tupperware party with a bunch of drunk housewives eating ambrosia salad. I can't even imagine.
And then all getting together after the party to make applesauce for 7 hours.
Exactly. And talk shit about the person who brought like a fingerling potato.
And put Red Hots in it.
Yeah, oh God. Do you like Red Hots in your applesauce?
I don't like Red Hots, period.
Oh, my mom puts them in there and I kind of like it. Okay, look, so I'm just going to give you a quick summation of what happened to Brownie Wise. She perished at age 79 in 1992. Another fun fact, Tupperware containers are imprinted with Braille.
Really?
Yes, I think that's very cool. Huh. And today across the globe, a Tupperware party is ever... Guess how often a Tupperware party is held as of 2018?
Every minute.
Every 1.4 seconds.
What?
Yeah, over 500,000 Tupperware parties are held each year in France alone. Can you imagine
that
French
is
people?
Crazy. The people in France, the people who invented Le Creuset.
Exactly. They're like, bonjour, Tupperware. Get in here, meatloaf. Anyway, that's my story of Tupperware.
Well, I have one Tupperware personal experience to share, which is my favorite Christmas album growing up that my mom had was called Celebrate the Season with Tupperware.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it
actually, I knew that. That's awesome.
Obviously, it came, I guess, with some sort of purchase of Tupperware. But it was like a compilation album, so it had like the Carpenters on there, and some it's like original classics or whatever. But it's like the thing that I most remember when I think of Christmas is like that album because my mom would always play it, and I actually bought my sister a vinyl version of it last Christmas or a couple Christmases ago, so it's still available out there.
That's so cute.
Get a copy. Get yourself a copy.
Go ahead and head down.
Instrumental version of Sleigh Ride is Chef's Kiss.
Oh my God, that's so fun. That's a great memory to have. Oh, that's really sweet. Should we go ahead and do top three? Or should we do recommendations for leftovers or favorite leftovers? Let's do our favorite leftovers.
Okay.
What are yours?
My favorite leftovers is to, like, I like all the white carbs. So mm-hmm. you take, like, a roll, leftover mashed potatoes, leftover sweet potatoes, and, like, leftover macaroni and cheese or noodle item, and just smash it all together onto a roll.
Mmm. That sounds, I mean, like a Thanksgiving sandwich.
Carbs on carbs.
Carbs on carbs on carbs. Sounds delicious.
What about you?
Oh, but that's only one. Are we going to do three?
Oh, that was three. That was like five.
Oh, but because each item counts as one thing.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I don't really have a favorite Thanksgiving leftover. I don't have a tradition in which, like, I do a Thanksgiving leftover per se. But I will say my three favorite things to do, like, with leftovers in my normal life, which is my number three is that when I, like, roast vegetables, like, I often have ends of roasted vegetables or withering vegetables that are going bad in my fridge. And I usually always have eggs. So pretty much every week I just take my withered vegetable ends and I make, like, a frittata.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, my, like, most go-to vegetable thing.
I think that withered vegetable ends is a good, like, metal band name.
Totally. We are withered vegetable ends. Fuck you, Brooklyn. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. So, and then I also make a thing that's, like, really good with withered vegetable ends, which is that, like, I whip them up in the food processor. They have to be roasted for this. I whip them up in the food processor with, like, some pecorino, maybe some, like, pickled peppers. And then you have a dip, like a veggie dip. That sounds
delicious.
And it's so, so, so good.
Really? And dip is my favorite food, so this is perfect.
It's so perfect. And it, like, really, if you just have that, like, little bit of broccoli you don't know what to do with, or, like, it just works for anything. Or even if you make it with fresh vegetables, it doesn't have to be leftovers, but, like, roasted vegetable dip is just so satisfying. It really helps if you have, like, olive oil and pecorino. It makes it really delicious, but, you know, you don't have to. You can always also throw, like, a can of beans or chickpeas in there, some tahini. And my number one go-to thing that I do with leftovers is make stock. When you were talking about earlier, people mm-hmm. who, like, really try, you know, as a chef and as just someone who likes to cook, I try not to waste too much either. And I have, like, a bag in my freezer, and I roast a chicken maybe once a week or every other week. And I just have different bags in my freezer for, like, my little vegetable, like, you know, the tops of leeks and the bottoms of leeks and onion tops and bottoms and whatever that seems like it would go. I just apple cores, and I throw it in a bag in my freezer. And then, like, every 1 or 2 weeks, I just go ahead and throw that in a stock pot, and you got a soup going. And I make broth, and then I have broth in my freezer.
Yeah, it's really a great idea.
Yeah, it's kind of like my go-to with
lefties. It's great for these times when we're back to being trapped in our homes.
Totally, totally. Oh, I have another tip that I want to talk about with leftovers too, quickly, because I know we have to go. But a lot of us got really excited about making sourdough last year, or maybe, like, years ago, maybe been making sourdough forever. But if you make sourdough at home, you, like, usually discard some of it so you can make fresh starter, because otherwise it just overflow. But you can use that starter and just, like, sprinkle some salt in it and put it right into a hot frying pan, and it makes, like, this delicious sourdough pancake. And it's very low gluten, because, I mean, if you're a celiac, it wouldn't work. But if you're trying to, like, maybe not eat too much gluten because it hurts your stomach, because all the gluten's kind of been eaten up in the starter. So it's really good.
Oh, interesting. That's really a great idea.
Yeah, it's
Thanksgiving delicious. Leftover I can get behind.
That is a great Thanksgiving leftover, and you can put all kinds of shit in there. You can go ahead and put, like, you know, whatever burnt vegetable ends, whatever our band is called, or fresh vegetables.
Withered vegetable
ends. Withered vegetable ends. Some kimchi is nice in there, scallions, or you can do it, like, sweet with, like, some fruit and honey and butter. It's really good. Try it out. This was a great episode.
Great episode.
What a fun, great idea.
Interesting.
Yeah. I was going to, you know what, Nicole and I always chat about the show, like, a couple days before. We're like, what should we do this week? And you always have, like, the greatest ideas. And my ideas, when you pick a fun idea, is always terrible. My idea this week was going to be death.
You're like, let's do death. And I'm like, leftovers.
Like, I didn't even tell you that until just now, but it's like, interesting. How are they going to make that work? Like a food comedy history Nicolas Cage podcast about death. Oh, one more thing. I did remember what my Nicolas Cage thing was that I had been talking about during the summer. It was that I wanted to get a cage match tattoo. And I wanted to get a tattoo of like a match, and in the burning flame would have been Nicolas Cage's face.
Oh, so that reminds me of another Nicolas Cage movie that really gets me in the gut, which is the Sucker Punch, or what? It's not Sucker Punch. Is it Sucker Punch?
Oh, no. Kick-Ass?
Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
The spoiler alert, the final part of the movie, he's literally burning to death while giving his daughter that he's horribly abused and turned into a mercenary. But it's like makes me cry every time because he's like on fire and he's telling her how to kill all the bad guys.
Yeah.
And it just breaks your heart.
God bless you, Nicolas Cage. If you're listening right now, I'm assuming you're probably petting or eating a bald eagle that you own. And we would like you to call into the show because we absolutely love you. I love Nicolas Cage.
I just read a long form article about Carrot Top, mm-hmm. and he actually hasn't had plastic surgery for the record. Or he says, you know,
really?
According to him.
I think he's fucking lying, but whatever.
It was actually a really interesting article. This kind of like follow him around for a couple of days.
Interesting.
But he is friends with Nicolas Cage. They hang out all the time. Nicolas Cage spends a lot of time in Vegas, and he has a show in Vegas.
That's amazing. Can you imagine what it would be like to spend time with Nicolas Cage and Carrot Top? Probably very boring, actually.
It didn't sound boring. Like they were going to wear like sequin costumes, but they decided not to. It seemed very weird.
Oh, man. Okay. So my first instinct would be to think that it would be a rocking good time. And then I was like, well, that would have to be like they would cancel each other out and they would just like knit together or something. But
I feel like he's one of those people that's successful who didn't like turn to drugs or alcohol or anything. So he like in the article, the person who's interviewing him mentions that he only eats half of what he orders. And he was like, he only eats half of what he orders. He has a 28-inch waist. And I was like,
wow. Okay. All right. Carrot Top, whatever.
I eat all of what I order and my waist is larger.
Maybe.
But for now, I think my face looks better than Carrot Top's. But he is about 15 years older than me, so we'll see what happens.
He's in his late 90s. Oh my God, speaking of which, I'm sorry, Amanda, I know you're probably so annoyed with us, but I do have one last thing I want to say. Right before the show, I was reading news, I had a couple minutes, and I saw that the Queen of England, this bitch is riding a fucking pony. She's 94. What? She's 94. She's on a pony.
Where? Shouldn't she ride a normal horse?
I mean, I'm surprised that she's on any horse. Can you imagine being 94 and mounting a horse of any kind?
I can't imagine being 94. It's never going to happen for me. But I think that if you live a life of luxury. Also, I think if a TV show is being made about you, you probably stay alive long enough to check it out, right?
That's true. She could have been airlifted onto the pony. We have no idea. But she looked very adorable. And the queen actually looks like my grandmother, my dad's mom, my grandma Helen, looks exactly like Queen Elizabeth. Imagine if it was Queen Elizabeth and I just found out someone knocked my door tomorrow. They're like, you're the heir to the throne. Like King Ralph. Have you ever seen King Ralph with John Goodman when he finds out he's like the king?
Oh, yeah. I always, for some reason, get that movie. I conflate that with Green Card for some reason.
Oh, with Gérard Depardieu?
See. And what, Andy McDowell?
Yes. With Gerard Depardieu, who drinks 14 bottles of wine per day. God love him. Wow. Well, we really should start a movie podcast because it's just obviously time.
King Ralph. Yeah.
So we can talk about King Ralph, finally.
We can talk about
what you've all been waiting for.
That 15 people have seen and 15 people care about.
Amazing. Okay. Well, Nicole, this has been a pure delight. I missed hearing your adorable voice. And
I know,
I
missed you too.
And well, we're gonna have a chat after the show, as we like to do. Okay, hasta la pasta, folks. See you later. Thanks, Amanda,
bye,
for letting us go along. You're a treat. Bye.
God bless.
Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Food Radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.